Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 19, Text Number 25. Yadatmani arpitam chitam santam satvopabrimhitam dharma jnanam sa vairagyam aishvaryam kabipadyate yadatmani arpitam chitam santam satvopabrimhitam dharmam jnanam sa vairagyam aishvaryam chabhipajyate yadatmani arpitam chitam shantam satvo prabrimhitam dharmam jnanam sa vairagyam aishvaryam chabhipajyate. Yada, excuse me, when Atmani, in the Supreme Lord, Arpitam, fixed, Chitam, consciousness, Shantam, peaceful, Sattva, by the mode of goodness, Upabrihitam, strengthened, Dharmam, religiosity, Jnanam, knowledge, Sa, he said, Vairagyam, detachment, Aishvaryam, opulence, Cha, also, Abhihipajyate, achieves. Translation and purport by the followers of His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. When one's peaceful consciousness, strengthened by the mode of goodness, is fixed on the personality of Godhead, one achieves religiosity, knowledge, detachment, and opulence. Please repeat. When one's peaceful consciousness, strengthened by the mode of goodness, is fixed on the personality of Godhead, one achieves religiosity, knowledge, detachment, and opulence. When one's peaceful consciousness, strengthened by the mode of goodness, is fixed on the personality of Godhead, one achieves religiosity, knowledge, detachment, and opulence. Purport. A pure devotee becomes peaceful, shanta, by desiring everything for the service of the Lord and nothing for himself. He is strengthened by the transcendental or purified mode of goodness and thus achieves the supreme religious principle of directly serving the Lord. He also achieves jnana, or knowledge of the Lord's form and his own spiritual body, detachment from material piety and sin, and the opulences of the spiritual world. One who is not a pure devotee of the Lord, however, but whose devotion is mixed with a fascination for mystic knowledge, is strengthened by the material mode of goodness. Through his meditation on the Lord, he achieves the lesser results of dharma, piety in the mode of goodness, gyan, knowledge of spirit and matter, and vairagya, detachment from the lower modes of nature. Ultimately, one should be a pure devotee of the Lord, since even the best the material world has to offer is most insignificant compared to the kingdom of God. Shri Chaitanya Manavisham Shapitam Jena Bhutale Swam Rupa Karamana Dhananti Swapadantikam. I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master is opening my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances under the dust of his lotus feet. Namo Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shimati Tamo Krishna Goswami Niti Namani. Namo Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namani. Excuse me. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pashtati Deshatarine Vanchakopatrubhascha Kripa Sindhvasivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Well, welcome to Monday's Srimad Bhagavatam class. Joy, thanks everybody for being here and for listening, whether you're listening on the temple PA system in the back or on the radio or online or with some technology. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11. Chapter 19, text number 25, and we're hearing Krishna's dialogue with Uddhava, right? The Uddhava Gita, and so many nice principles from the Bhagavad Gita are repeated. And so Krishna has just given this amazing four verses, text 20 to 24, where Krishna is going to state specifically... again, he's going to explain the supreme process for achieving loving service unto him. So before this, Krishna's been speaking a lot about the material world, our places in the world, sannyas, grahastha, varnashram dharma. So the mix of the material and the spiritual. How are we dealing with the material world as spirit souls? And he's given instructions for souls that have become a little bit enlightened, right? And they want more. They're asking, why am I suffering? Why am I in this world? What is the nature of time? You know, I notice the days go by so quickly and my body is getting older. What does this mean? What is the nature? Is there something more permanent than, you know, material time? And we know that there is. We feel it in our heart, and we can understand that we're conscious beings, and we're all raised with some kind of religion, usually, and we have some sense that God exists, even apart from our own experience of super soul in our own heart. We experience it outside. You know, we're given instruction to various kinds of religious instruction. But then by very great fortune, right, we somehow or other, we came to the Krishna consciousness movement, and this is the speciality, that there's knowledge of what it means to be, to achieve loving service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Isn't that amazing? Where else can you get such knowledge? Nowhere else. It's in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's in Bhagavad Gita as it is. It comes to us through the power and the process of guru disciple. Pardon me, that it's so powerful to receive knowledge when you're plugged in, right? You're plugged into the source. You're a disciple. You've taken a disciplic vow to follow principles, to study under a diksha guru. But we have so many Shiksha gurus as well, right? We have our Diksha guru. He gives us initiation. We're formally accepted. We make vows, right? I will chant 16 rounds every day. Whoa, every day? Yeah, every day. Not every other day. Not when you feel like it. Every day. Okay, every day. We're supposed to read. We're supposed to follow the regulative principles. Okay. That gets us just on the platform of a sadhaka, of a practitioner, of a student, you know, but we got to stay on that platform to get this knowledge through the parampara, through the Bhagavatam, through the other devotees that gives us what? Knowledge of how to achieve loving service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And things that pure devotees do were listed in the previous verse. Firm faith in the blissful narrations of my pastimes, constant chanting of my glories. Krishna gives a long list of things. It's very amazing. He says, these constitute actual religious principles by which human beings who have actually surrendered themselves unto me automatically develop love for me. It's automatic, right? It's like when we take medicine, we don't have to know how it works. We just know the medicine goes in the body and somehow it works. You know, the body needs different things, minerals, vitamins, substances that the body takes, and it goes into the cells of the body that make up what the body's made of, right? And the cells use different things to keep themselves alive, to reproduce, to manufacture, and to make these amazing bodies. They're machines, you know. They're so amazing what they do, what they create, enzymes and chemicals that keep our bodies alive. They're on a skeletal structure, so we have form and surrounded by all the things. Vital organs keep it working. There's skin to protect it, and all of these things work in an amazing way, but we have to give it, what we give the body determines, you know, the health of the body. And it's the same for us. We have to give ourselves, listen to the Bhagavatam, read Bhagavad Gita, chant Hare Krishna Association of Other Devotees. And when we do this, it's automatic. We don't have to know how the body works. It just works, right? The brain works, you know? It's automatic. And we know this is true because we see it in our lives, even in the material world, the things that we do mechanically. And after we do it long enough, right, it becomes like automatic, right? Sankirtan Prabhu's here. He's a guitar player, professional musician. So many things he can do, it's just like automatic, you know? He's practiced so long. He's so good at it. He doesn't have to ask, well, how's my body able to do this? How are my fingers able to do this? How's my mind able to? It's automatic. He's practiced. And it's the same for us. When we practice Krishna consciousness, we automatically develop love. We don't have to rack our brains. How can I love Krishna? Am I supposed to love his feet? Am I supposed to love it? I'm not supposed to go to his face right away. Should I just look at his face? No, I'm just concentrating on the feet. And I'm only going to have love for Krishna's lotus feet. No, it's not like that. You don't have to be artificial. You don't have to figure things out on your own. You don't have to speculate. You have to simply follow the instructions of the spiritual master as he's given them to us in Guru Parampara. And that potency, that spiritual principle operates in us to automatically give us love for Krishna. So in the verse today, Krishna is speaking to Uddhava after he's told him all these amazing things. What constitutes actual religious principles for human beings who've surrendered unto me and are developing pure love for me? He says, when one's peaceful consciousness strengthened by the mode of goodness, and here the purport tells us that's pure goodness, shuddha sattva, total goodness on a transcendental goodness that's beyond even material goodness, right? When it's fixed on the personality of Godhead, one achieves religiosity, knowledge, detachment, and opulence. And the purport states that, okay, when you're at this level, Not only do you know knowledge of God's form, you know your own spiritual form. This is vigyan, right? Knowledge of who we are in relationship to Krishna. But then the verse, the purport goes on to explain that, okay, wait a minute, one who's mixed, that's me, one who is not a pure devotee of the Lord, however, whose devotion is mixed with a fascination for mystic knowledge. Isn't mystic knowledge fascinating? How it works? Yeah, there's so many things in this material world we can become fascinated by, you know, because they're really, it's far out. Is that spiritual? Is that, and sometimes we think it is mystic knowledge and mystic powers. Sometimes people are fooled by that. And they think that the mystic side of life, the mystic side of the brain and its functions, and it is spirituality. But it's not. It's just material power. And so when we're fascinated by mystic knowledge, our devotion is mixed. And when we're mixed, we can still be strengthened by the material mode of goodness. And so we should still be, trying to go forward with our rounds, with developing this Krishna consciousness. Even though it's mixed now, you still achieve the lesser results of dharma, piety, in the mode of goodness. You get on the mode of goodness. And you gotta get on the mode of goodness, right? In order to get on the supreme mode of goodness, to get on transcendental Shuddha Sattva, you gotta at least be in the mode of goodness, right? If you're still in passion and ignorance, and passion's a little bit good for preaching, so, you know, it's okay to have a little passion, right? Get up in the morning, get things done, get going. I got a day to do. I got a job, or I got this. I got to go out. A little passion, if used in Krishna's service, is good. It's yukta vairagya. We use everything in Krishna's service. We don't have false renunciation from the material world. We don't deny the material world. We don't say it's just all bad. It is bad, and it's pretty much all bad, right? It's pretty rotten. It's just rotten. But we're here, and Krishna tells us, don't deny everything just to say, it's so bad, I'm just gonna deny it and sit here and meditate and on the impersonal absolute and achieve, you know, the Brahma Jyoti. No, that's one thing you can do, sure, but it's not really where it's at. The Brahma Jyoti is lonely. it's not where we're meant to be as spirit souls, right? The yogis that achieve Brahma Jyoti, they get lonely. They come back because everyone likes the association of others. No matter how antisocial or lonely or angry or whatever you are because of material circumstances, actually everyone needs everyone else. And we need association of others. And in the spiritual world, there's no loneliness, right? Nobody's hanging out alone. Nobody says, I just need to be away from you for a while, Krishna. Your sweetness is too great. No. In the material world, they might have that feeling, but in the spiritual world, they have bodies that can drink in the nectar of Krishna's sweetness unlimitedly. We have to have a spiritual body in order to have really the interaction with Krishna on the level that's being discussed here, and that the pure devotee is relishing Krishna purely, and Krishna's relishing the love of the pure devotee. And so it's a competition sometimes. Who can give the most love to the other? And this is special spiritual love of a nature. It's from the spiritual world. It's not material at all. And so that kind of love is actually what the soul's hankering for, right? It's not going to be happy in the material world where there's just material love. Material love has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Everything you see all over the world, beginning, middle, end. Trump, just elected. He's in the beginning. Soon he'll be in the middle. Soon he'll be at the end. Will that be sooner than 4 years? Well, we can only hope. But who knows? So these are things. Everything is like that. Everything is a beginning and a middle and an end. And we have a beginning, a middle, and an end. When is our departure date? When is our expiration date? I've pulled up my hair. There's no flaps on my skin. I don't see any expiration date. But it's there. It's not stamped on our bodies. But Krishna knows. The demigods know. What's the greatest thing that if you knew that you could utilize that knowledge in the best way possible? That'd be the time that you're going to die, right? That's what, was it King Nimi or someone like that? I'm probably not saying it right. He did some service for the demigods and they took him up and he did some service and they were very pleased with him. And they said, you can have a benediction, anything you want. He said, okay, what I want to know is once you send me back down to the earth planet, how much longer do I have to live? And they said, that's a really good question because you've only got like about 30 minutes after you get back, you're going to leave your body. He said, wow. So he came back, he sat down, he fixed his mind and consciousness on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He went back home, back to Godhead, because he knew I had 30 minutes. Who's the other great example? The whole Bhagavatam was spoken for him, right? Parikshit Maharaj, you know, he didn't try to fight the curse. Isn't that amazing? He could have easily undone, you know, the curse of the Brahmin boy, Sringi. He could have undone the curse like that, but he didn't. He just said, well, that's what happened, and I was wrong. He was in a weird mental state. He put the snake on Sringi's dad, and Sringi curses him. And so Parikshit just says, okay, I'm gonna use this opportunity, this incredibly negative situation. He's the emperor of the world, and he's going to sit down and fast for 2 weeks and just hear the Bhagavatam. And so everybody comes. All the sages from the whole world come and they speak Srimad Bhagavatam to him. So he knew he only had a limited amount of time. He accepted that fate and didn't try to cry or fight about it. He just said, okay, this is a difficult circumstance, but I'm going to make the best of it and I'm going to step. And he gets to step over the head of death, right? Because when the snake comes, the snake bird comes, he's leaving his body. He's gone. The snake bird didn't kill him. The snake bird is not why he died. He'd heard Srimad Bhagavatam from his eternal spiritual master, from Sukadev Goswami. Sukadev, Suka is parrot. Srimati Radharani's own parrot, you know, in a spiritual world, comes in the form of Sukadev Goswami to speak Srimad Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj. Just for Parikshit? Yes, but also for us, for all of the souls that were there that heard that. They heard the whole Bhagavatam. Many of them had probably heard it before that were there, but they heard it again, and then they were able to repeat it to others. And so they began to teach it, and Srimad Bhagavatam would go out. It wasn't written until this age when the poorness of our mental capacities of this pygmy age, right? This is the pygmy age, the little thing. Everything's small and our brains are small. Our ability to do devotional service is small, right? Our ability to engage in austerities is limited because it's Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga, the darkest age. And we can see how dark it is and how much darker it's becoming and will become, and we shouldn't be surprised, right? So we have to cultivate the material mode of goodness in order to push down the lower modes. And the lower modes are always, you know, grabbing, pulling, trying to make us, pull us down. But when we have gyan, knowledge of spirit and matter, we're actually in a position where we can actually say, you know, that's just a material desire, and it's a desire that I know what the result will be if I engage in that activity, so I'm not going to engage in that activity. And we know that it's different from a spirit, because we're spirit souls, and my spirit soul is not of the material world. It doesn't need material sense enjoyment. That's just my mind and my senses trying to convince me. And so the soul is taken for this horrible ride, right? And surrounded by the mind, intelligence, false ego. And so we have to make the mind, intelligence, and false ego take it to the mode of goodness. And so the things we achieve with the effort, you know, before we get pure goodness, we do also get vairagya, right? Detachment from the lower modes of nature. And ultimately, we will develop pure devotional love for Krishna. We will become pure devotees. And we can realize that the best the material world has to offer is so insignificant compared to Krishna's kingdom, Krishna's world, Krishna, the spiritual world. And we can see it right now when we just look on the altar. Excuse me. We're so fortunate to look at these incredible, beautiful deities, and every day a different outfit, every day fresh flowers, every day they cook for the deities, every day devotees come and take darshan. And we're so, so fortunate. And this repetition of these activities, of taking darshan of Lord, of taking a little bit of charanamrita. Does everybody know when you take a little bit of charanamrita every day, just a couple drops, it prevents you from untimely death. You know, it protects you from accidental death. So that's something attractive to me, right? That's kind of a material thing. Oh, I don't want death, you know. But it's spiritual, but it affects you in the material world as well. But that's just a little thing. The big thing is that you begin to develop a relationship with the deity, right? The deities are not just stone. They're not just marble. They're not just wood. Krishna's not just a hunk of wood, painted wood. You could paint wood and put it on an altar and say it's this or say it's that, but it's not Lord Jagannath, right? It's not Jagannath. Jagannath is here. Srila Prabhupada said he's left Puri. He's still there, but he's left. Sort of like Vrindavan, right? Krishna can leave Vrindavan, but he's still there, right? And actually Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, right? But he goes out to have pastimes. And so Jagannath, Lord Jagannath, is in so many temples all over the world in ISKCON. And we get to do Rath Yatra for him. And we're going to have Rath Yatra next year in downtown Dallas. Jai. Jagannath Swami Ki. Jai. By Jagannath's incredible potency and mercy, it's developing. It's going to happen. The planning is going on now. The effort's being made. The funds need to be raised. So here's a little commercial for fundraising. We're asking everybody to please dig deeper and give. Typically you'd give 100 or 200 for a festival like this. We need 1,000. We need 1,200. Stash some cash away, you know, stash it away every month. Put away 200-300 bucks. By the time of, you know, May, the Rath Yatra is going to be April the 7th. April 7th, Saturday, April 7th at Clyde Warren Park. Yeah, it's a new park. It's over the highway. They built it over the highway. It's been this huge success thing for downtown Dallas. You know, thousands of people go there every day because it's a park in the middle of Dallas. Oh, what an amazing thing. New York's had that for centuries, and now Dallas finally got smart. Oh, we need a park. So by the mercy of Krishna, they lowered their price because they used to want $40,000 to rent their park. So they've come down quite a bit to an amount that we can handle. So we got to raise funds to pay for that. We're going to have it at Clyde Warren Park. We're going to have booths. We're going to have prasadam. We're so fortunate they even accepted the fact, you know, we have to cook and serve prasadam. And their restaurant can't do that. You know, they don't have facility for cooking prasadam. So they said, here's an exemption. Here's an exception for you. You can bring food and serve it and sell it and cook it there and sell it. So we're going to have food for sale and we're going to have free prasadam, just like a regular Rath Yatra. So it's going to be, the emphasis is, a cultural presentation. We're presenting the culture of Krishna consciousness and we get to have Rath Yatra. So it's just amazing. I mean, who would have thought that, you know, this could happen. I've been knocking on doors and calling people and doing texts for about 15 years with different groups and entities and places downtown. I never even got a reply. No one even called to say no. I didn't try that hard. I'm not trying to toot my own horn. I did a little bit, you know. I contacted the Crow Museum years and years ago, but it took our devotees having relationships with persons at the Crow. That's what it's all about. It's about relationships. It's the relationships that we have with people. When devotees are out in the material world, you might say, well, I don't see so-and-so very often, but that person's still a devotee and he's still practicing Krishna consciousness. He's still got Krishna in his heart and Jagannath on his mind or her mind. And they're out there meeting people. Sometimes we have very wealthy devotees that are there. And they're spreading Krishna consciousness in a way that Krishna wants at a high level. And then, or high material level. And then these things can happen. So this is the outgrowth of those kind of things. And that means all kind of preaching is important. That means all kinds of relationships are important. And it means all kinds of activities that you engage in with other people in the outside world, you must be the example. You must still be a devotee. You must be Krishna conscious. Because that's why they presented themselves. They're devotees. And so Krishna, the people that they've met have been impressed by that. And they said, let's do this. This is something that would be good. Not only we want the Hare Krishnas in downtown Dallas, but downtown Dallas wants to attract people to downtown Dallas. The Indian population will come, right? We hope thousands of Indian people will come. Westerners will come. Everyone will come, just like for a Rath Yatra. So we're going to try to promote it and get lots of folks to come. And then these things are possible because of Krishna, because we're making the effort in Krishna consciousness. We're being an example. We're not being foolish. We're not wasting our time with sense gratification. We're actually living our lives, making money, taking care of family, taking care of the temple with donation, and spending our time here and emphasizing that over anything else we could be doing. And then when you do that enough, it's automatic. Krishna gives you pure love for him. And the love that we can develop for Krishna is so amazing. It makes even diamonds and rubies and jewels and emeralds, which are very rare. Diamonds are common, but emeralds and rubies are extremely rare. And it makes those emeralds and rubies insignificant. They're nothing. They're stones that the devotees in heaven or in the spiritual world, they use them to build their houses with just because they're pretty stones. But they don't mean anything to them, right? They even take stones that are wish-fulfilling stones. What are those called again? Chintamani. Yeah, they take Chintamani stones. And they have no use for them. It can fulfill any desire, these stones. And there's that story, right, with Sanatan Govinda. He had a Chintamani stone. He threw it in the rubbish heap. He was in Vrindavan. He's worshiping his deity. He's speaking with his deity, right, the deity. And he have a very personal relationship. So somebody hears about this stone that he had. It's a wish-fulfilling stone, and it'll give you anything you want. And so he goes to Sanatan Goswami. He said, I heard you had a stone like this, and you just threw it in the rubbish heap. He goes, yeah, it's over there. You can have it if you want it. And he goes, turns and starts to do devotional service. And so the guy goes and he's like, wait a minute, why did he throw it away? There must be something better, right? There must be something better than the greatest thing that you could get in the material world with this stone or your own effort or inheriting it or stealing it or whatever you're going to do to get wealth and power and money and whatever, however you're going to get it. There must be something much greater than the greatest thing that you could get with all your wealth and power in the material world. There's something much greater, much, much, much greater. That's so great that it makes the material world just pale into tiny insignificance. It's just nothing. It's just gross. And that is pure love of God. Pure love of God. And then you get to associate with Krishna in the spiritual world in your own original spiritual form. Isn't that amazing? I've always been a little bit obsessed with that. Not that I try to find out or be artificial, but isn't that something really cool to think about? What am I in the spiritual world? Who are we? You know, that's a pretty interesting question. It's a pretty amazing thing to think. We're going to go back to Godhead one day. We're going to pick up our relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world in one of these relationships that we see. And so it's so fascinating and so enjoyable to begin the process of Krishna consciousness and to know these kind of things are there. Even if we're not like me, I'm still mixed. I'm trying to become unmixed. I'm trying to get purified. But even as we try to get purified, Krishna's giving us help. He's given us encouragement. And that comes in the form of the feeling in our heart. Wow, I'm getting realizations. I'm getting attachment to the deity. I'm getting attachment to the devotees. I'm getting attachment to the holy name. wow, I chanted my rounds. I'm feeling attachment for the Holy Name. I want to chant some more. It's actually tasty. It can be enjoyable, but it's hard to do. It's hard to sit down and make yourself do it. But when you do it, you're so happy. Oh, I've chanted. I've read. I came to the temple. I heard class. I had nice prasadam. I can go out in the world now and think about how can I spread Krishna consciousness to people I know? How can I spread Krishna consciousness as I'm doing my job? How can I get some free time and maybe go distribute books? Well, you know, I haven't done that in decades, but maybe I can do that. Maybe we could get a Harinam party together. Maybe we could go out on Friday or Saturday night or during the day or something. You know, I'll call some devotees. Who can we get a mridanga player? Let's go. And then you go out. And then when you're giving Krishna to others, Krishna is so pleased, isn't he? The more we try to give Krishna to others in a small way, in a big way, Krishna is so pleased. That devotee that gives Krishna to others is the most dear to Krishna. More dear to Krishna than Balaram. More dear to Krishna than his own self. Because that is his own self. His own self, Srimati Radharani, giving mercy. She just wants to give the mercy. Give the mercy. Krishna takes the form of Lord Chaitanya to taste the love that Radharani has for Krishna. And in the ecstasy of that, he breaks open the storehouse of love of God and says, everyone should have this. Everyone should have pure love for me. And I make it possible. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu makes it possible with Balaram as Nityananda, Lord Nityananda Prabhu. Amazing, huh? And to read their pastimes in Mayapur, in Nadia, what Lord Chaitanya does, the interactions. You know, they chant all the time. They just do kirtan and they taste this ecstatic kirtan and then they have pastimes, you know. Lord Nityananda will sometimes he takes his clothes off and just shows up, you know, naked. And Lord Chaitanya says, what are you doing? You know, why did you do this? Well, Lord Nityananda gives an answer that's doesn't even answer the question. Well, you know, the fence was blue, so I thought I should, you're not even, why do you give an answer that's not even applicable to my question? So Lord Chaitanya has to pull off his chadar, right? And he puts it around the Lord. And he's smiling, he's laughing too, because Nityananda Prabhu is avadut. He's avadut. He is completely engrossed in love of God, and he is, as a result, feels no compulsion to follow ordinary rules of decorum because he's on a pure level of pure love of God. But he comes down to that to a little bit. He's not always in that blissful state because he preaches, right? And who does he go to? Jagai and Madai. Two vicious, vicious, you know, murderers, rapists, you know, drunkards. And they just terrorize everyone all the time. And they're always moving around. They take their tent and they pitch it somewhere. And then it just the mayhem follows. And, you know, it was horrible, right? And so of all the people, Lord Nityananda, I'm going to save those two. Because if those two get saved, then that will increase the fame and name of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Throughout, and it did. And so we're so fortunate. Let's keep our eyes on the prize. Eyes are on the prize of Krishna, Krishna consciousness. Pure love for Krishna is the goal. And sometimes we get discouraged or we get obstacles are placed in our way. Difficulties are really bad in our life, material life. I mean, there's a lot of really, you know, tough things happening to us in our lives. And we have to not be affected by that. It's just a test. But Krishna won't send us a test that's too much, that will overwhelm us. He sends us a test that we have to surrender more and get over that. And then we learn from it. And so let's remember that and keep trying. Never give up, right? And never leave this movement. Because this movement is Srila Prabhupada's body. It may not always have perfect leadership because everyone's trying to learn and get better. It's a hospital, you know, and everyone who comes here is a little bit sick. Some are a little bit sick and some are very, very sick. And some are not sick anymore, and they take care of the ones who are sick. So we have to be tolerant and loving and patient with each other. And when we do that, we can continue to practice Krishna consciousness and go back home, back to God. It's Krishna's promise, right? So that's it for me. Thank you for listening. Thanks for being here. And do we have any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhuji.
Yes, Prabhu. I heard recently a commentary to the effect that devotees are being, can be, this person speaking like this anyway, he's seeing devotees as the property of Radha Kalachanji. So in that mood, he has a very deep devotional sentiment for the devotees. So my question is an accurate theory to say that we may perceive devotees in accordance with modes of material nature, and we should be trying to move through those modes to see devotees in a most purified, high level as we're able to do?
Oh, yeah, I like that. It's really neat to think of that property of Krishna. Someone gave me a T-shirt one time, and it said, property of TKG, Tamal Krishna Goswami. And I really like that. I thought, oh, that's really sweet. It was from some very dear friends, some devotees. And they had a couple of the shirts made up, and I got one of them. I was so lucky. And it was done in the style of, you know, universities apparently do that. Schools do that. And people wear a shirt that says property of, you know, Pepperdine or whatever, university. Something like, so it's done in that, in a style that's like that, you know, that it's like a collegiate kind of thing. But that's what it says, property of, you know, TKG. I guess it grew out of like the school would have stuff, you know, and they would put a stamp on it, like on a chair, property of, you know, University of Texas. So people wouldn't take it away. So then it grew out of that. Hey, I'm the property. Yeah, that's a nice thing. Let's stamp ourselves property of Sri Sri Radha Kalachanji, and then Maya can't take us away. You know, yeah, it's a wonderful meditation. It's a wonderful thought, and and you've tied it into the right way to see other devotees that way, that we should. If you know this person that you're dealing with or that you're mad at or that you're really happy with, whatever the situation is, if you remember that person is actually the servant of Radha Kalachanji, and that means that they're their property. Yeah. I think the concept is way, way more than that. It's a spiritual thing. You know, we're even more than just the property of Krishna. We're intimately of the same nature because we're spirit soul, but we're just tiny. And we're separated for purposes of pastimes, right? Krishna wants pastimes, so his energy is separated eternally. And he has eternal pastimes. The topmost pastimes are with Radha and Krishna. But we're part of the pastimes too. But we've taken ourselves out of it because we needed to come to the material world for a little while and get rectified, right? Or get over the sense that there's any enjoyment except Krishna. There's not. He creates this material world, so we have to come here and learn that and go back. Then Sri Prabhupada says we won't ever want to come back. But while we're here, we're under the misconception that we're material. But I like the idea, and we're not. We're spirit soul in a material body. But what's the body? The body's temporary. Who owns it? Krishna, ultimately, because he owns everything. He owns literally the ground, the material, everything that's made of anything. Krishna owns it, right? So yeah, Krishna owns the devotees. He owns your body. Someone said, you know, well, what this business of Krishna going out with girls in the middle of the night, you know, these girls are other men's husbands. and the retort is, wait a minute, you know, those women are actually eternally Krishna's wives. They're eternally Krishna's part and parcel. The husbands aren't real. They're just figments of their imagination. And in fact, your body and your wife's body actually belong to Krishna. So the question becomes, what are you doing with Krishna's wife? What are you doing with Krishna's property? What are you doing trying to enjoy Krishna's material energy in an improper way? Yeah, actually, if you're married, it's okay. That's a proper way to enjoy Krishna's material energy because you do it for Krishna. You're married, you're devotees, you know, it's okay. But for, you know, outside purposes, you're the offender. Krishna's not the offender because those girls are eternally his part and parcel. They're his, their expansions are all expansions of Srimati Radharani. And actually, everything, all of us are expansions of Srimati Radharani. We're spirit souls. So, yeah, we are the property of Krishna. But in a way, in the spiritual world, we get to be even more than just property, right? Because property in the material sense, it denotes ownership. And Krishna doesn't own us. He doesn't use us as property, right? He gives us free will. We're much more than property, right? Because we have free will. But still, it's nice to think of ourselves that way. As the property of Krishna. I'm the servant of Krishna. I'm a servant. So I don't have any interest other than serving the master, right? The supreme personality of Godhead. When he's your master, you have no problems, right? You know, no problems. We see dogs. We see cats. When they don't have a master, you see them running around. At first, when a dog in our neighborhood just gets out of his fence or his whatever he was being held in by, he's looks excited, right? You can see him like, I just got out. I'm going to look around. And I'm going, but you know, in a short time, he's going to be going, oh man, I really messed up. Because pretty soon he becomes a street dog. He doesn't have an owner. He doesn't have anyone looking after him. He doesn't have anyone feeding him. He doesn't give him water, giving him shelter, and giving him, most importantly, protection. A dog on the streets around here, he's as good as dead. Unless his owner finds him or someone decides to take him in and take care of him, the city's going to get him and they're going to euthanize him unless he gets adopted by somebody. But chances are more likely he's going to get killed by other dogs or he's going to get run over, right? So you can see sometimes some dogs, they got their tail down, they got their head down, and they're moving through the neighborhood because they are scared. They've already seen a lot of things, they know, and they're usually they're headed for the highway, and it's like, well, you know, they won't be around much longer, right? Literally, that's, you know, that's us if we don't accept the shelter of the spiritual master, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're dogs, you know, without a collar. You know, Sri Prabhupada said, this is our dog collar, you know, our neck beads. It's our dog collar. We're dogs with a master that will take care of us. And it's the example is also given of the ocean, right? What do we want to swim around and we're being overwhelmed in waves and we're drowning? Get on the boat. The spiritual master pulls us into the boat, right? But still, I like that illusion, Hare Krishna, that, you know, we're the property of the Lord. It's nice to meditate that way. If I'm the property of the Lord, then I don't have any other business doing anything except, right, serving the Lord. That's a pretty high standard, you know. Wow. I thought about that, getting a tattoo that said that, property of Tamal Krishna Goswami, or property of Radha Sri Sri Radha Kalachandra. But I would be being a liar, you know, because I'm struggling. I'm fighting. If I did it, it wouldn't be true. So I'm not, you know, I'm trying to be. So we don't want to try to say we're more than we are. You know what I mean? I just mean me personally, how I would say. I can't say, you know, I'm trying to be, that I could make the statement that one day I have absolutely no interest of any kind other than Krishna, serving Krishna. That's the level we can achieve and are supposed to achieve, right? One day. But we're not, you know, some of us are there, some are not. I'm not there, but I'm trying to be. I'm sorry. Probably went on too much. Was that all right?
Also, just in addition to that, I read it somewhere that Prabhupada referred to devotees as the paraphernalia. You're going through the different items of things for worshiping Krishna, And he listed devotees. I forget which book I read, but I marked it. He listed devotees as part of the paraphernalia for worshiping Krishna. So I was trying to think like that. You know, you need the ghee lamp, you need the incense, and you need the devotees for the full worship ceremony. You need them. They're needed. You know, you can't.
Wow, that's nice. Yeah. Everybody heard that, right? That's really nice. Yeah. Devotees, the paraphernalia. Yeah, and then the things we hold are like an extension of us, but we're using them. And every time I go into dress the deities, which I do a couple times a week, you go there and like for the morning dressing, you have to make the tray, which has all the items that are offered to the Lord as part of the Puntaratriki Marg, right? Worship of the deity. And you sit there and you go, everything is right there for me. The tray, the little trays, the things that hold the water, the cloths, the substances, everything, the flowers are in the walk-in cooler, the tulsi leaves, someone's picked them and brought them there. You go to drawers and you pull them out to pull out the clothing that the deities will wear, and then you get that out, and then you match it with the jewelry that you want them to wear so the colors all work, right? It's all just sitting there, waiting for you to come. It's amazing, you know? You think about it. I didn't do anything, really, except show up. Everything Krishna put in front of you, so you just put it down, and you go up on the altar, and you worship the deity. An hour, 2 hours, you're done. They have a new outfit. They got bathed. Every day, all the deities are bathed. Radha Kalachandri aren't bathed because they're too big, right? You can't get a water pan underneath them. But all the other deities, except Lord Jagannath gets a bath with a mirror. Did you know that? They hold a mirror up and they pour the water, and it looks like the water is pouring on him as he's looking in the mirror. Isn't that cool? And then he doesn't have to get wet because he's, you know, we have to make some acknowledgement of what his earthly substance is. It's not earthly, but he's completely spiritual, but we don't want to, then it would require constant painting, more painting than he gets. But all the deities have to be repainted, you know, every so often. But it doesn't mean that they're material. So, yeah, it's true. We're like, we put ourselves in a position, and then if we're willing to do it, we put ourselves in the position, and Krishna really does so much of it, actually. That's what I sometimes will think about. Gosh, I hardly did anything. It's almost like Krishna dresses himself. And it's really true. A devotee told me that a long time ago. He said, sometimes, you know, you should just sort of, you know, look at what you're going to pull out and be patient about it and just try to think, you know, what would be best. But actually, sometimes the deities will pick out what they want through you. There's sort of a little meditation you can do, and when you really relax, and sometimes you go, why did I end up with this, you know? But then you'll put it on and you'll work, and it'll work. You'll go, wow, I would have never done that myself. Or what made me pick that color today, you know? The deity, Krishna's in our heart, you know? So it's not that it's separate, that we just do it and give it and it's done, you know? No, it's a relationship. And the relationship is so powerful because the person you're worshiping is also in your heart, right? So, you know, there begins to be this reciprocation, you know. Sometimes, you know, and Jayapataka Swami, he encouraged us to start writing down the pastimes that the deities have with the devotees. The deities will do things. You know, there'll be things that happen, like in Jagannath temple in Mayapur. Those deities are very active. You know, they climb the fence at night and they go steal jackfruit. They steal mangoes. You know, the farmer comes out, some kids are in my yard, you know, he's chasing them. And he sees the kids jump over the fence, go back into the Jagannath temple compound, right? Oh, your kids are stealing from me. You know, he sees one kid ripped part of his dhoti, you know. He has a piece of cloth. They take it and it matches right up with Balaram's cloth. You know, this one pujari's son wanted to wanted to steal this particular jewel off Subhadra. He'd been very attracted to it. And so he snuck into the temple, I guess, you know, maybe in the afternoon or sometime, I don't know when, but the pujari's son got in the temple and he was going to steal that right off of Subhadra on the altar. And so he's going up to him and this hand comes and just smacks him right in the face. Knocks him out. Balaram. Then there was the time a plate of khichdi or prasadam was given to a rickshaw wala or someone like that. But he was Muslim. So he took the food. He said, oh, this is from Krishna temple. Threw it down on the ground, you know, face down. So, and the person said, why did you do that? Now, you know, it's no one can eat it. If you didn't want it, just give it back to me, you know. And so that night he had a dream. He was being beaten. This black guy, this black-faced guy with big white eyes was beating him up. No, excuse me, other way around. This white-faced person was beating him up. And then this yellow person was there too. And she was going, kill him! Just kill him! Just kill him! He has disrespected the prasadam of Jagannath. He said it, and they were beating me and they were hitting me and, and they said, and he said, then this black person came with big round eyes and said, okay, that's enough. And he saved me. Said they were so angry. This white person, he was going to kill me. He was like, oh, how dare you disrespect the prasadam of Lord Jagannath. He goes, he saved me. So when he woke up in the morning, he ran to the temple. And he was out there waiting when the doors opened. And he ran to take darshan and offered obeisances. He said, he saved me. It was him. And he was beating me. And she said, kill him. So these are things the deities can do. The deities that Mother Revati and Sankirtan Prabhu got to see in Vrindavan on their recent trip. These are the deities of Murari Gupta. They're Gorni Thai deities. They have similar pastimes. They were in Mayapur being worshipped by an older Goswami, and this young woman came, and she never left. They would come in her dreams. They said, you're our mother. You have to cook for us. No one's making a sweet rice. No one's looking after you. So she dropped all her business things. She was like a businesswoman. And I guess it was the end of the early 20th century, something like that, or end of the... And so she stayed there her whole life. And the deities did all these amazing things, amazing pastimes that they had, you know, going out of the temple. They moved to Vrindavan. And they didn't have any shoes. And they asked her for shoes. She said, no, if I give you shoes, you're going to go out. She said, no shoes. You stay here. And so they would go out anyway. And they'd come back and their feet would be all muddy. It's like, you naughty boys. Yeah, I told you not to go out. I'm locked the door. They still would get out. And then this lady came and took darshan. And then she was staying in a guest house. She had a dream. The deity said, will you buy us some shoes? So she went and got some beautiful silver shoes and she said, here, they told me to buy shoes for them. She said, how did you know that they needed shoes? She said, they came, they asked me for shoes. So she gave them to the lady. So, does that happen to me? No, but the deities still convey knowledge. They convey, they're not happy about something. They'll let you know. In no uncertain terms. I was trying to make Gorni Thai do chant Gayatri. I would put the little, this is a long time ago. I'm a lot smarter now, I hope. I would take their Gayatri through when I was doing something, part of the bathing. I had a little time because I was doing something else. So I thought, well, I'll just wrap it around their arms because their hand is up here, right? And it's easy to wrap their Brahmin thread. I thought, oh, then they can chant their Gayatri. Oh man, I got a feeling. The second time I did it, it was like, this is not right. I was like, ooh, took it right off. It wasn't a voice or anything. It was just a feeling. That's sahaja. It's prakriti sahaja, right? You don't speculate. You don't make up things. You know, you don't do things, especially with the deity, that aren't part of the deity worship as it's given to us, you know. We're supposed to worship in this way, and that's what you do. And there's still lots of room for your own expression of love and how you dress them and bathe them and do things. But you shouldn't make up things. And I was making up something. I was totally making it up. And I got this feeling. It was just like, wow, such a strong, strong feeling. This is not right. This is not something you don't make the Lord do something, right? You know, you don't just say, you know, if you love somebody, you know, there's that loving thing. Okay, you know, Krishna and Radharani, maybe they have so much love that they'll, as jealous lovers or whatever, they'll influence each other to do things. But it's not like that for me. With the deity, we're not, you know, we don't try to order Krishna around. We don't tell Krishna what to do. It's like when we do the deity worship, we invite Krishna. Krishna, come, would you get into the pan so I can bathe you? You know, when you put down flowers and chant mantras, you know, please, please come and sit here. Please come. Can I put you back? Please, can I dress you now? That's what all the mula mantras and the mantras are all about. And they're not hard. They're easy. But you follow, you know, then you memorize it after a while. But it's still good to do. I always take that sheet up there. If I miss something, I go back, you know. And then the deities are interacting with you. But it's so amazing to think about and to experience it. And so sorry for the long answer. But yeah, it's really nice. We're very fortunate. We're so fortunate to meet the devotees, to meet Srila Prabhupada, to be part of this movement. Yes, Mataji.
Don't do that. And if they don't like, somehow they will communicate.
Absolutely. Mother Revati's pointed out an incredibly important principle of spiritual life, but especially of deity worship. Sometimes the deities will communicate with other devotees when something's not right. And, you know, the head pujari comes and tells you something. You probably ought to listen, right? And it's like she came to me a couple of times like, oh, but wait a minute, this was so cool. It was so nice. No, no. Dharma, you made something up.
Prabhuji, also, I heard from another devotee, she was my friend, and she had gonitai, and she would hide the shoes. She would not make it visible. She gave the shoes for them, but she would not make it visible because they are going to wear the shoes and jump off the altar and go away. So gonitai has this tendency because they always want to be doing kirtan. So they want to go and do the harinam. So they have this mentality to run away.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever seen the photo? It might be online if you didn't see it. The Panchatattva, the big Panchatattva in Mayapur, they wear harinam chuddars as their whole outfit. They're dhotis and kurtas and chuddars all have the holy name on it. The way the holy name chudder, like your chudder is right there. It's white and red, but it's in white and red. And the deities are wearing white and red today too. It is the most unbelievable outfit you ever see on the big Panchatattva. I mean, they're all beautiful, right? But when I saw that, somebody gave me a photo or I saw it online and I copied it. The mood is, they can't wait to get out and do kirtan. You just knew that's what they were going to be doing that evening, you know, or that day. They were wearing that outfit. They were going to be out doing. And it's like that. You can sense that energy, that feeling, you know. Yeah, it's not just something the mind made up. Cause it's just too incredible, you know. You can't, it has to have a divine source, you know. So, thank you. That's wonderful. And thanks for the pictures Mataji and Prabhu sent me, the pictures of their Pishimas. They're called Pishimas Gornitai because they called her Auntie Pishima. Actually, they called her Ma, but everyone knew her as Auntie. So, originally they were the deities of Murari Gupta. who was Hanuman, but took the form of Murari Gupta for the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. Isn't that amazing? So Hanuman as Murari Gupta. And everybody knows the funny story, right? Where Lord Chaitanya said, tonight, Murari Gupta, just chant Hare Krishna, okay? Just, you can't chant Ram. And so he went home. No Sita Ram. So he went home and all night he was like, ah, I can't just chant Hare Krishna. Yeah. And he went back in the morning and he cried to the Lord. He was at his feet. Lord, I'm sorry. I have to chant Ram. He goes, Lord Chaitanya said, that is all right. You are Hanuman. I know you can chant Ram. Amazing, huh? He just did it as, you know, a playful interaction. So these personalities are really special and amazing. And it's nice to remember them throughout the day and the things we're doing. That's Krishna consciousness, right? That you remember these deities. I have them on my phone now, the picture that Prabhu and Machaji sent, so I can see them. And you can see in their faces, they look mischievous as anything, right? Their arms aren't even at regular places. It's like they're like this. Like they're going to jump off or grab you. And Lord Chaitanya does not look like Nityananda Prabhu. They both have these amazing expressions. So, yeah, they're amazing. They're near the entrance to Loy Bazaar, kind of near Banka Bihari Temple. It's a very small temple, but you can ask for them if you're ever there. Pishimas Gornitai. And I was told about them from Mukunda Datta Prabhu, because he lives in Vrindavan now, and he supports that temple a lot, and he's always helping them out. Yeah, so they're very special deities. And there's stuff on the web you might be able to get. There are some things that have their pastimes. You can read about them. There's a lot more. There's a lot of pastimes about what the deities were doing and interacting and stuff. So, and, you know, okay, sorry I went over. Thanks for listening. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.